F2. Number 12A.
Work harmoniously with every other idea for the edification of man. And then in love, he shows that love always fulfills the whole nature of my being, and therefore, through the idea of love, everything that is corruptible goes out of my way, and that which is incorruptible will be put on. So death is swallowed up in victory. Can you see that 1 Corinthians has a very different message? And if we try to pinpoint this message, this problem, it's a fundamental problem each one has. See, that's the wonderful thing in these epistles, and that they all touch a fundamental problem, not the problem which just some people may have. They are always touching problems which everyone has, because they are fundamental. They are the structure of our being. So if we want to see what the problem is, we can see that it shows that whenever we base ourselves on our unity with God, that basing, that claiming ourselves with the unity of God, that has a Christ power in itself. And therefore it's the Word as the Christ. It has the Christ power in itself. It begins to evolve something new in us. The Christ does that. The Christ always translates. The Christ evolves. The Christ resurrects. The Christ transforms. The Christ reforms. The Christ is turning over and overturning and overturning until it comes to the right it is. So that's the point. Now, what is the problem that each one fundamentally has to face? See, so often you have friends or so that come along and say, oh, you know, I love Christian Science. And Christian Science just means everything to me. But I just don't seem to make any progress. It just doesn't seem to do anything to me. Well, that's 1 Corinthians. What is necessary that it does something to me? Romans hasn't said it yet. Romans just has presented that there is a way of salvation, and has presented the doctrine how that salvation is possible. But 1 Corinthians says, I tell you what to do in order that it does something to you. And the moment I say that it does something to you, it means the Christ. That the Christ is working on us and working on us and lifting us up and resurrecting us. And therefore, he says, you know what it is? And I come now to this B in the chart, you have to claim it. You have to base yourself on that Romans. Without this foundation which is laid in Romans, without standing on that foundation which is in Romans, nothing happens in us. This very fact that we claim our unity with God is the Christ, and therefore brings the whole Christ into action as a revolution, as an evolution, as a resurrection, as a transformation, as a reformation, or whatever you like it to define. The tone is always the same. It saves, begins to save. So without, if anybody comes along to you and tells you this, well, you know where to put your finger on, because one doesn't stand for it. The standing for it, the claiming it, there is no other foundation laid, says Paul, than that is laid in the Christ. No one would better really say than Paul with this, that it is not enough to think about these things. He says, no, it's not thinking, that's the word. to accept it and accept it in thinking, that's all right, but that's Romans. That's all right, but that's the beginning. Afterwards comes the second step, B. You claim it. You build yourself on it. You stand on it. Make it your foundation. Nothing is more disheartening than a lukewarm attitude in science, a half-hearted attitude in science. In Revelation, Jesus said to John, the Revelator, said, tell the church, be either cold or warm, but if you are lukewarm, I spew thee out. That's the term, I spew thee out. So lukewarmness in science is just a terror, and it's much better to leave it aside and be really cold about it. Be really cold about it, or then be hot about it. Hot stuff, you know, real hot stuff. But lukewarmness is just spewed out. It goes on over years and it doesn't do a trick. Doesn't lead anywhere. So little by little we gain here the rules of Christianity and on the plane of Christian Science. You see, on the plane of Christian Science, Christianity says, well, first you have to accept the doctrine. That's the first thing. But don't leave it there by accepting it and saying, yes, it's wonderful. Oh, this science is wonderful. Oh, this science is wonderful. I would like to do anything for this one, for this science. All right. The next point is, well, then do it. Base yourself on it. Be wholehearted in it. Found yourself on it. Don't say to every situation, well, that's too big a problem, I back out. Oh, don't say to every situation, well, I think that's too early. I will do that later on. Well, that's not basing. See, that leaves the second dimension out of consciousness. There is no foundation except that which is laid in Romans. So, the law which we encounter here, I try to analyze in a few elements, so that if we know the elements, we just can elaborate that law. See, the law says, all right, when we base ourselves only on our conscious unity with God, then God evolves a divine mode of life in us. See, the Christ begins to work and evolves a divine mode of life in us in place of a mortal mode of life. We just can't get into the incorruptible if we don't let go of the corruptible. And we just can't reach into the true sense of manhood if we don't let go of the old stinker. Just can't. The corruptible must put on incorruption. So, as all men have died in Adam, all will be made alive in Christ. So let the Adam die. No tears about him. Well, you see, with these elements, I have taken away everything which is in the way of illustration. I have just the blunt facts, metaphysical facts. So, if we know this law, well, then we can elaborate on them, you see, and can go in any way we like through the synonymous terms. What else do we want to think in a treatment or in prayer than to think about ideas? Than to think about the ideas of God. But let's think and be conscious and pray about the ideas of God in a full way, in an ordered way, in a complete way. And we can only think about them in a complete way if we take in all the aspects of God, of the seven and the four. So here we can think about this law and can see, well, if I am faced with problems, I can think, well, shall I back out or shall I not back out? What happens if I don't back out? Well, then I say, all right, in the measure as in my consciousness, I base myself completely on my unity with the divine mind. That's the first element, see. That evolves in me a true sense of intelligence, of wisdom, of power, of law, of apprehension, of comprehension, of action, of light, of insight, of mind reading, of mind seeing, foreseeing, in place of ignorance, darkness, dullness, apathy, unlawfulness. Can you see how that evolution goes on? And so I can see that is a law, that in the measure I base myself completely on my conscious unity with spirit and all that spirit means, then spirit evolves in me an ordered life, a life of unfoldment, of progress, of fruition, of birth. It evolves in me all that purifies my life, that sanctifies my life, in place of a material life, disordered life, retrogressive life, frustrated life, barren life, and so on. I can know that because I know that's the law. So I can anticipate, see, through this consciousness, I can anticipate what will happen with my life in a principled way. So you can go to soul and you just sit back and say, well, what does that law, that divine law of 1 Corinthians mean that soul? It means that if with all my heart, with all my being, with the fiber of my whole being, I try to be one with all that means about soul, about the ideas of soul, that consciousness of my unity with soul is just going to do something to me. It evolves in me selflessness. It evolves in me the common unity of interest. It evolves in me a balanced sense of being. It evolves in me joy and freedom. See, all the ideas of soul, it evolves in me a true sense of satisfaction, of happiness, and of joy, and of rejoicing. It evolves in me all the unction of soul, and the blessedness of soul, in place of what goes away from me, in place of dissatisfaction, an unbalanced sense of being, an interrupted sense of being, a corporeal sense of being, a selfish sense of being, all that goes. And so I can be conscious of principle and say, well, what does that divine law which exists in being do to me? If I am consciously conscious with everything I have in my being of my unity with what principle means, then this divine principle begins to evolve in me all that is principle-like. It begins to evolve in me true scientific sense, true scientific consciousness, a love for science, a love for scientific knowledge, a love for the wonder of science. It begins to evolve in me that sense of authority which is principled, therefore sense of impersonal authority, a scientific authority, in place of what? In place of having a personal sense about it, in place of being unsystematic about everything, unscientific about everything, tentative about everything, that goes away. Can you follow me in the... I don't want to inspire you, I want to show you the law. Because the law, if I can show you how you can go through the law, that law will inspire you. I don't want to inspire you. But during this week, we can show you how we can think. I don't like think. I always say think, but I don't like think. If we can pray orderly, systematically, you see, then you have the tools in your hand in order to attune your whole being to the divine being. And when our whole being is attuned to the divine being, then being uses us. We don't have to apply this science. This science must apply itself. It uses us. We shouldn't use this science. This science is using us. As long as we try to use science, it's a human element in it. It's human willpower in it. It's human outlining in it. But how can science use us? How can God use us? And unless everything in our being is in accord with being, is attuned with being. And it can only be attuned with being by being like. Therefore, that's what we do with these laws. We attune ourselves to being. Well, where was I? With life. All right. I can see in Corinthians, you see this law of Corinthians, I see, all right, if I pray and I'm consciously one with the fact that there is only one life and I'm one with that life, then that life works in me. It begins to evolve in me the true sense of life instead of an old sense of life, the spiritual sense of life instead of the material sense of life. It begins to evolve in me the fullness of life, the spontaneity of life, the method of life, in place of the barrenness of life, of the deadness of mortal life. Can you see how it begins to evolve? Then in truth you can think, for instance, I don't know what I have in the textbook, in the book, there are only examples in here, you see. You can evolve, elaborate them and elaborate them infinitely. You think about truth. Well, what happens if I pray and in my prayers I'm one with truth, with that one only truth, that infinite standard of being? Well, that begins to transform a mortal standard in me into the divine standard, the material standard into a spiritual standard, a human standard into a divine standard. It transforms in me, it evolves in me the true sense of manhood instead of the mortal sense of manhood. It evolves in me the true sense of dominion instead of a false sense of dominion. The true sense of health in place of a false sense of health. The true sense of health about everything, the form of everything, the health of business, the health, the true form and health of body, of business, the health of relationship, the health of government, everything, in place of a false sense of dominion. So you can go to love. And I like to think about love and say, well, I can be one with love. God is love, but I can be one with love. If consciously I go with all my being, with all my love, with all my adoration to love and see that I can be one with love, then love comes to me in its whole loveliness and evolves in me all that is love-like. It evolves in me the true plan of my being. It evolves in me the true design of my being. it evolves in me the true disposal necessary for working out the plan of love in me. That love comes to me and evolves in me a universal sense instead of just a Swissish sense. It evolves in me a wonderful wide sense instead of just a narrowing little classified sense of being. That love evolves in me all that is love-like. Takes away fear, takes away hate, jealousy, revenge, takes away all that which is envious, which is narrow, which is belittling, and gives me the universal sense of everything. If I claim it. So, you see what we try to do, and what really this science should do to us is that out of a spasmodic, tentative thinking along some metaphysical lines and truth, we do that what the musician does before he plays his performance. He goes and takes his violin and one string after the other, he tunes it until he has the right pitch, one after the other. And when he has it, then the music can flow through it faultless. Now, this doing, that's what we are doing, you see, with the Lord. And we must do that with a tuning and a tuning. Then we are transparent. Then God uses us. Not the way we like it, but the way God likes it. And that's a big way. All right, tomorrow. Now, let's just see that this idea of the epistles is an idea of God. It isn't my idea, it isn't Paul's idea, it isn't yours idea, it's the idea of God. God revealed himself to the age of Christianity as a science of Christianity. And so all what we are considering together has nothing to do neither with you nor with me, nor with Paul. It is that pure idea of God. So we are just here in that wonderful sanctuary worshipping the glory of God. And if we can keep this purity of idea in our heart and detach from it everything, all material conceptions, detach from this idea that it is being taught by Max, received by you, that it detach from it, that it is taking place in a place and a certain time, just detach that everything from it. Then the birth, as Mrs. Eddy says, will be natural and safe. It will be without crisis, without chemicalization. It will be natural and it will be safe. It will stick. It will take form in each one of us and become definite. It will become an inward conviction which is just there, and then you know that you know. Yesterday we have taken Romans and 1 Corinthians and have seen, just quickly to recapitulate, that Romans is that cornerstone which first presents the doctrine of the new gospel. It presents the doctrine, the word of the word. It presents the new doctrine. What doctrine? It's that new doctrine that if we have faith in God and in his Christ, that God will translate himself through his Christ to us and make us partakers of God's nature. That's the new gospel. Then, when he has shown this new doctrine, he goes to the first practical application in 1 Corinthians and says, all right, now you have a new foundation on which to build. There is no other foundation, he says, than that which is in Christ. So build your life on this new foundation. And building our life on this new foundation of Romans will do something to each one of us. It will do something, and we know what it will do. It will always evolve the divine life in us, a higher life, a nobler life, a higher style of life, a higher method of life in place of the old way of life. So we had 1 Corinthians, which showed that if we base ourselves, if we stand on that new gospel and base ourselves on this wonderful faith in God, that God will come to us and evolve in us a higher sense of life. Now we go on to 2 Corinthians, and we just will see how 1 Corinthians bridges over to 2 Corinthians. They are not two epistles apart from each other, in watertight compartments, without any spiritual link or bridge. Every epistle is a part, so to say, of a chain, but always linking within the preceding one and linking into the following one. At the end of 1 Corinthians, after Paul had shown how this Christ is resurrecting within us a new sense of life, a new pattern of life, a new standard of life, he then at the end says, but thanks be to God, which giveth us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. He begins to speak about the victory. And he says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. He indicates at the end, that's what I have read was at the end of 1 Corinthians, he indicates there at the end that something more is needed than 1 Corinthians, namely that we have to stand firm, steadfast, unmovable, that we have to abound in the work, and to know that this standing in this new doctrine will not be in vain. In other words, he experienced with the Corinthians the same thing which each one of us will experience when we use and apply 1 Corinthians, the law which we have taken yesterday. Namely, when we stand and base ourselves on the law of 1 Corinthians, where we say, all right, now, whatever comes towards me, whatever proposition is presented to me, I now stand in the law of 1 Corinthians. I will now stand and base myself on this new faith and will work it out on a Christ-like basis, and no more in the old way of the human will and human desires. But then you can be quite sure, mortal mind doesn't give in so quickly. Human will doesn't give in so quickly. Human desires within us doesn't give in so quickly. Personal sense within us doesn't give in so quickly. And because it doesn't give in so quickly, there is arising a certain struggle, a certain battle, and if we don't know the law of 2 Corinthians, which we are going to take, we may be baffled, we may think we are not on the right track, we may think we have not enough understanding, we may think all sorts of things that we are not succeeding.